A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend and getting ready for a good week in store. We have one more day where we're talking with ATF Director Robert Sakata and ATF Chief Counsel Robert Leiter. And today's topic is more future focused, right? So we know that these reform efforts are underway. More than 30 reforms have been introduced. We heard from Rob Leiter on the last episode that he doesn't think they're halfway through yet, that there is more work to be done and more regulations to change, both in terms of the regulations that the industry deals with, the regulations that gun owners are dealing with, but also internal reforms as well, right? So the last question that I posed to both Rob Leiter and Robert Sakata was a pretty simple one, at least on the face, right? How do you make sure that these reforms don't disappear the next time a Democrat's in the White House? It's a simple question. I don't know that there is a simple answer, but we started with Rob Leiter, and you know what Rob had to say, honestly, I think is really revealing. Take a look and listen.
It's not easy to do that. I mean, you can see, first of all, the regulatory process is very laborious. So it's not, administration can't just come in and unwind it immediately. Just like we face with engaging the business and the record retention rule, when you want to unwind a regulation, you have to explain why you're doing it, including why your previous justification for the regulations no longer hold, and those reasons will be subject ultimately to judicial review. So it's not the easiest thing to do. There are also other areas that it just won't be easy to unwind because there aren't good reasons to do it. The 4473 still has, the proposed one, still has all the basic components that are necessary for tracing and to run the background check system, but it does it in a way that's less confusing from the current version. And I don't think you can come in and say, oh, we want to go back to the old forms because we like it when dealers violate the rules because then we can engage in discretionary enforcement. That would not be a proper reason to come in and regulate. And so my prediction is that most of the regulations would hold even in a future administration. There would undoubtedly be attempts to roll some of them back. And for those, if you have an administration that's trying to impose a gun control agenda, my guess is they will start tackling new issues as well. It won't be solely looking in the rearview mirror. That said, elections matter. There is no way to design a regulatory system that will ingrain itself, notwithstanding what happens at the ballot box. At the end of the day, Americans, you know, we choose our own future at the ballot box politically, and decisions that are made there will have public policy implications, including in the gun control space. And there's no way to entrench that if the American people start voting a different way. The only way to keep the policies going is to, to support candidates who have a particular view.
So again, I mean, twofold answer there, right? The first thing you do is you write these regulations and these rules in such a way that they're not going to be able to easily be rescinded the next time there's an anti-gun administration. But, Leiter's broader point is that you've got to protect these reforms. You've got to protect these changes, and you've got to reflect, I think you protect the change in philosophy. And you do that through elections, right? This is the role that we all have to play. I posed the same question to ATF Director Robert Sakata. What does he want to do, and what can be done to ensure that, we don't get a David Chipman, director of ATF, a gun control activist who comes in and starts wrecking things? Take a look and listen.
I saw this firsthand, and I think Robert's seen it since he's been here. From the outside, there's, a belief that everyone at ATF is not a supporter of the Second Amendment and that people hate guns here. That's not the case. I think there's people here that, you know, may not particularly care about firearms, but there's good people here who want to do the job and they want to uphold the Constitution. There's a large number of us that are gun owners. They're shooters, whether they're law enforcement like me and multi-purpose, it's, you know, for our jobs and also because we're recreational shooters as well. Hunters as well, fishermen. We've got a normal assortment of human beings here that I think are a great representation of our country, but they're good Americans. They're trying to do a good job, and they are tired of the yin and the yang, right? They're getting tired of every administration getting pulled one way or another. And they saw firsthand at the, towards the last year of the Biden administration, the feedback coming to them from the public, from the industry, from our state and local law enforcement officers who are hearing the negative impacts that were happening to them and their in their communities from their constituents based on the regulations that were pushed forward. In particular, again, the three, stabilizing brace, frame and receiver, and engage in the business. And the outcry was horrible. People were very upset. That was shared with the leadership team at the time, and the special agents in charge told the director and the deputy at the time that, hey, look, this is bad. This is going to go really bad for us in the future because the people who are our partners in this battle to reduce violent crime, they are telling us we didn't get it right this time and that we went down a path that actually backfired upon us, right? And again, our mission is to work shoulder to shoulder with these state and local law enforcement officers to reduce violent crime in the cities that are most impacted. If they can't stand shoulder to shoulder with us because their constituents are not happy with what we're doing with regulations, again, that's another factor that impacts our ability to do our job. So our outcry wasn't adhered to. You know, the administration had their agenda. The director was doing his job carrying out the agenda as well. But that was learned by us as a really tough lesson, okay? And I can tell you the last year and a half has been a very challenging place for ATF. I think I'm very thankful the administration gave us an opportunity to show the good things we can do in support of their agenda on the regulatory matters, but also on the criminal enforcement as it relates to violent crime and domestic and international trafficking, arson and explosives investigations as well. And I think that the agents and the industry operations investigators, our intelligence research specialists, our folks at the lab, and everybody here who supports the success of this agency's violent crime mission all recognize how close it came to ending, all because of a very driven political agenda, which was focused against the firearms industry as opposed to being focused against the criminal element responsible for violent crime. I don't think the culture here will allow for that to occur in the future. Again, I've been doing this for 34 years now, actually. Yeah, 34 years this month. So big picture, I've worked for presidents that I didn't vote for. I've worked for presidents I voted for. I never undermined the administration of whoever was in office because as a law enforcement officer, we're supposed to carry out our mission, right? But we were also not put in a position in my law enforcement career to not respect the rights of the American people, whether it's a small community or a large community that I was serving. Our job was to focus on reducing violent crime, using all the tools I have available here. But again, focusing our efforts and energy on the people actually committing the crimes. And that's what we're doing. Again, I've been doing that my entire career. We're doing that today. We're going to continue that. And I think as long as we stay focused on those efforts, that culture here will prevent anyone from coming in here. And as Robert said, it's not so simple. It takes time. But I will say one thing that will preserve whatever improvements that are made under this administration, whatever cultural changes we make in the agency, it takes time. And when the longer those changes stay in place, the longer those impacts will be positive all across the board in crime reduction, in respect for the Constitution and for our American people and for the industry on the explosives and firearm side. And I think that what that tells you is, again, what Robert said, elections have consequences. And if people don't believe in what the administration is doing and don't vote to extend into the obviously President Trump can't run again, but if the American people don't vote for an administration that supports the same types of things, then it's a lot easier to change when you only have about two years of an administrative record that's going to be attributed to these regulations that Robert and his team worked on. But it's a lot harder to challenge facts that go 4 years, 6 years, or 8 years, because then you can make outrageous claims that, oh, these things that these guys did actually reduced public safety and provided for a negative environment. And you might get away with making that argument. But if you have 6 or 8 years of a record to show that that's not true, you could say whatever you want, but it's going to be easily defended. And not many courts are going to try to agree to overturn a regulation on a whim because someone's making some false allegation as to what the impacts were. So time takes size. And as you know, culture eats policy every day, right? I could change everything, but if we don't bring folks around and they don't see it and feel it, and they're seeing it and feeling it today, they really are. And I think the more time that passes, we're going to pass that on to the next generation of our employees, and they'll make sure they're doing the right thing for our country every day.
Again, I think a very revealing answer from Robert Sakata. And again, going back to the importance of elections, right? So, and by the way, both Sakata and Leiter are right about that. No matter what safeguards you try to put in place, anytime you get a new administration, and certainly you go from an R to a D, there are going to be fundamental changes. We saw that from the transition from Donald Trump's first term to Joe Biden. And all of a sudden, you had a whole of government attack on the firearms industry, on gun owners. I am very concerned that that is going to happen again the next time we see a Democrat in the White House, the next time Democrats have control of Congress, that all of these reforms will come to a screeching halt. And so again, you know, as frustrated as you might be by politics, you can't sit it out. You've got to be involved. You've got to be engaged, and you've got to be fighting to protect the rights that you hold dear. That's the bottom line. All right. I do appreciate Robert Sakata and Robert Leiter sitting down with me. We'll hopefully be able to do this again in another few months. I jokingly said, when I was talking to him, I said, you know, there's very few things that will get me up to Washington, D.C., and this is one of them. So I will brave the D.C. traffic, and I will return to ATF headquarters in a few months if they will have me. But I also invited Robert Sakata and Robert Leiter down to the Farmville area if they would prefer to get out of the Beltway and maybe do a little shooting. So that might happen as well this fall. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that maybe they can take a road trip down to Central Virginia. All right. On to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. Let's start there. We're going to be talking with Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks tomorrow on Variant Arms Cam and Company about the latest. You know, Toby's also founder of the Civil Rights Coalition. They are challenging Chapter 135. They've got the voter referendum coming up in November to repeal these gun control laws that were put in place supposedly in the name of public safety, right? Wrote about this on Friday at Bearing Arms. There are new training requirements in order for you to get a license to carry. And you have to have a license to carry in Massachusetts in order to possess a handgun in the home. These training mandates, Gun Owners Action League, very concerned that they're turning into essentially a marksmanship test. So not only do you have to go through classroom training, but then there's live fire. It's supposed to be live fire training. There's a live fire test component to this. And what is being proposed is you've got to hit 5 targets in a row at, I believe, 3, 5, and 10 yards in order for you to receive your license to carry. Now, keep in mind, most people who are taking these courses will have never held a gun before. They certainly don't own a pistol, because that's why they're taking the license to carry training course, so that they can have one in the home. And this is one way to trip up would-be gun owners, right? Just one aspect of the new law. Meanwhile, violent criminals in Massachusetts, they're not getting their license to carry. They're not going to a gun store to buy a firearm. They're getting their guns on the black market, maybe through family and friends, maybe through a straw purchase, maybe through theft, maybe because they're building their own. But they're getting a hold of a gun regardless. The question is, what happens? I mean, Massachusetts has really draconian gun laws. Mandatory minimum sentences for illegally possessing a firearm. And yet, we still see headlines like this. Police blotter. Dorchester man arrested on fourth alleged gun offense. Boston PD seized alleged moped gunman. Fourth time. Not the charm. For this 33-year-old man, I believe. 33-year-old Kalen Hall. Now facing charges including carrying a loaded firearm without a license, fourth offense, unlawful possession of ammunition, possession with intent to distribute a Class B drug, and resisting arrest. Officers made a traffic stop in Dorchester around 4 a.m. Saturday morning after observing a person without a helmet riding on a moped that was not registered and had its lights off. The driver, quote, immobilized the moped and then fled while clutching his waistband. Officers caught up to the suspect and detained him. They found a 22 caliber pistol loaded with 10 rounds of ammunition. Also recovered little plastic bags of crack cocaine and fentanyl from the moped while it was being towed. So how does a 33-year-old man end up getting arrested? And we know that there have been at least three previous convictions, right? Because this is his fourth offense. So how does a 33-year-old man get arrested, convicted, or take plea deals, far more likely, for illegally possessing a gun, and then get kicked right back out into the streets? Why? Well, I mean, I thought this wasn't supposed to happen. Hey, I thought Massachusetts gun laws were supposed to prevent people like Mr. Hall from illegally getting their hands on a gun in the first place. But then when they're caught, supposedly, these really restrictive laws come down the hardest on guys like Mr. Hall here, right? Clearly, that's not the case. Clearly, that's not the case. You've got career violent felons, like the guy who shot at Memorial Drive in Cambridge earlier this year, actively on probation. Actually, the day of this shooting, told his probation officer that he wanted to die and showed off the gun that he had. But police weren't able to respond fast enough to prevent that shooting. Instead, it took an armed citizen and a Massachusetts state trooper to put a stop to the threat. Career criminals are illegally arming themselves with ease in Massachusetts. Highest violent crime rate in New England. And yet again, if you want to exercise your right to keep and bear arms lawfully, you have to run the gamut of training mandates, live fire training, forking over a decent amount of money. And there are still concerns about, you know, the arbitrary nature of the denial of permits in some cases. So this is, again, something we're going to be talking about with Toby Leary on tomorrow's Cam & Company. But I saw this story and it just, you know, again, this is supposed to be an impossibility under Massachusetts gun laws. And yet it is not. It is far too common because the laws are aimed at lawful citizens, not at violent offenders. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. This one, we'll put it in the probably category. Shooting at a Tuscaloosa gas station may have been self-defense during robbery attempt. It sounds like that is what police are looking at this point. This happened just after 5:30 Sunday afternoon at a Circle K gas station in Tuscaloosa. Officers found one person had critical injuries, was taken to a hospital for treatment. Violent Crimes Unit arrived, interviewed witnesses, processed the scene. Investigators said that initial findings indicate the shooting may have been in self-defense during a possible robbery attempt. Police said surveillance video supports what the witnesses have told authorities. No charges filed as of Sunday evening. The investigation is ongoing, so hopefully we will learn in the next day or two that the armed citizen has officially been cleared. But if the surveillance camera footage and the eyewitnesses are all backing up this allegation of self-defense, then I'd say that that's where the police are going to come down. So we'll keep our eyes on this story, bring any more details as they become available. And finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time will enable to do the right thing. A good Samaritan in Cockeysville, Maryland, who raced to warn a family that their home was on fire over the weekend. This was Sunday afternoon. Zane Levy was driving down the road in Baltimore County when he spotted flames coming from the back of this home. He ran straight to the front door, took out his phone and started recording, banged and yelled at the people to get out of the house. He said, I recently went into, is there anybody in the house? Are there any pests in the house? Pets in the house? He said, I recently joined the junior firefighter program a few months back, and we've been talking about some fire behavior and stuff. Baltimore County crews called out about 12:45 Sunday afternoon. When they got there, they say the fire was burning the home's rear deck and it already spread into the second floor. But by the time crews arrived, there were no residents in the home. They had all been able to escape. Levy said, I was just thinking in my head, I pray that nobody's in the house. He said, when I was there, I walked around kind of on the right side of the house. There was a car that was parked. That made me think that somebody was inside the home. Thankfully, again, no injuries. One firefighter did suffer minor burns while battling the blaze, but nobody in the home was injured. The fire brought under control less than an hour after the first call, but some significant damage reported. And good for Zane Levy. For the young man's presence of mind to see what was going on and to respond accordingly. I have to say I'm not thrilled that Zane pulled out his phone and started recording, but this is what we do these days. So, at least he didn't just sit there with his phone in hand recording the flames. Oh, wow, that's terrible. That's horrible. At least he did the right thing, and he ran to the door of that home and try to get the folks out. So in the right place at the right time, we'll be able to do the right thing. Zane Levy there in Cockeysville, Maryland, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you here again tomorrow. Again, we'll be talking with Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks and from the Civil Rights Coalition about everything that's going on in Massachusetts. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day today, that we're keeping you up to date on everything that's going on around the nation when it comes to your right to keep and bear arms. And if you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that because it does make a difference. So thank you. Enjoy the rest of your Monday as well as Mondays can be enjoyed. And we'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.